Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 74.
We've got Tripitaka and the gang. They're heading west. It's late summer, shifting into autumn. There's this, a sudden rain that washes away the last bit of summer heat.
Mm-hmm. A real feeling of change in the air.
Totally. Then just one single sycamore leaf falls. It's like a signal.
A poignant little detail.
And the evenings, fireflies, you know, zipping around paths, mm-hmm. and crickets chirping under the bright moon.
It paints such a picture. Yellow hollyhocks, red knotweed.
Wilting willows, cicadas. It feels peaceful, almost serene, but maybe a little sad too, like something's ending.
It's definitely the calm before the storm, you could say. That quiet makes what comes next feel even sharper.
And Sharp is right, because that calm just vanishes. Ahead, there's this absolutely enormous mountain.
Huge.
The description is amazing. Peaks stabbing the blue sky, touching the stars, blocking out the sun.
I mean, just try to picture that scale.
It's overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
And Tripitaka, he sees it and, he freaks out. Immediately asks Wukong, is there even a path? Can we even get through this?
And this is classic Wukong, isn't it? It connects right back to that opening idea about internal states. Well, he doesn't panic. He doesn't laugh at Tripitaka, not really. He just kind of chuckles and gives him this proverb.
Ternoj tu tu.
Which means?
Basically, tall mountains always have paths for travelers. Deep waters always have people with boats. There's always a way.
Oh, right. So it's about perspective.
Exactly. How much is the mountain actually impassable? And how much is it just, you know, Tripitaka's fear making it seem that way? It really makes you think, doesn't it, about our own obstacles.
Definitely. How many times do we build up a mountain in our heads? Wukong's not just solving a problem. He's shifting how Tripitaka sees the problem.
That's the key. It's a perspective shift. And it works. For a moment, Tripitaka actually smiles as worries kind of melt away and they start moving forward again.
No, it's never that easy in these stories, is it?
Nope. Trouble's always just around the corner.
So just as they're starting up the slope, they see this old man. He's standing there, looks a bit rough, messy hair, thin beard, carrying a staff with a dragon head.
And he yells out this absolutely terrifying warning. Hey, monk heading west, stop. Don't go any further.
Oh, boy.
Says this mountain. It's crawling with fierce demons. And then he drops this line. They've eaten everyone. All the people in the world, basically. You can't go this way.
Eaten everyone. Wow, that's intense.
And Tripitaka's reaction. Pure terror. He literally just falls off his horse. Bam. Lands in the grass, groaning.
Can't blame him, really, after just getting over his fear of the mountain itself.
Right. So this whole sequence, the fear, Wukong's eventual response, which we'll get to, it sets up a really fascinating situation for us to dig into today.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
We're
going
to look at the demons, sure, but also how fear works, how wisdom counters it, the role of, transformation and reputation.
Yeah.
How it all comes together when facing something that feels totally overwhelming.
Okay, sounds good.
So we just saw the old man deliver that bombshell warning. Man-eating demons, Tripitaka on the ground. Now Wukong thinks fast. He knows his usual look. You know, the monkey face, the rough way he talks might just scare the old guy more. Or maybe the old man won't tell him everything.
Good point. Need the intel.
So, strategy time. He transforms. Poof. Into this really handsome young monk. The text says, Yu Xiechina.
Meaning?
Bright eyes, clear eyebrows, nice round face, looks proper. And he carries himself with this, scholarly, gentle air. Total opposite of his usual self.
Aha! Clever. Disarming.
Totally. It's strategic disguise 101. And in this form, he walks up to the old man.
And I bet he doesn't just politely ask questions.
Not Wukong. Even disguised, he's bold. He starts questioning the old man, almost implying hey, maybe you're in league with these demons.
Whoa, really? That's gutsy.
Yeah. He's not just gathering facts. He's poking, testing the old man, trying to see where his loyalty lies. It's almost like a challenge.
And does it work? Does the old man spill the beans?
Oh, yeah. It prods him to reveal just how powerful these demons supposedly are. And it's not just brute strength. It's connections.
Ah, celestial politics.
Exactly. The old man says, they sent a letter to Spirit Mountain, and boom, 500 arhats came to greet them.
500 arhats. Okay, that's serious.
They send a note to the Heavenly Palace. 11 great luminaries show up to pay respects.
Wow, big names.
The four seas dragons, friends. The 8 cave immortals, they hang out regularly. The 10 earth yamas, the lords of the underworld, they call these demons brothers.
Brothers with the yamas, okay, that's a big deal.
Even the local gods, like the city god and the earth spirit, treat them like honored guests. It's this huge, tangled web of influence, power through connections.
So the old man's painting a picture of demons who are deeply plugged into the whole cosmic system.
Precisely. But Wukong's reaction to all this name-dropping, he just bursts out laughing.
Laughing!
Yeah. Grabs the old man and says something like, "Stop right there. If these demons are buddies with my junior servants, it's nothing to brag about."
His junior servant? He's saying all those powerful beings are beneath him.
That's the implication. Naturally, the old man is completely confused. Like, who on earth are you that gods and yamas are your haoxing xiaoxi, your little underlings?
And cue the dramatic reveal.
You got it. Wukong says, "Sada. Okay, I'll tell you the truth." And then drops his identity. "This little monk, I'm from Water Curtain Cave on Flower Fruit Mountain, name's Sun Wukong."
The Monkey King himself.
The one and only. And then he starts boasting about his past, how he used to be a huge deal as a demon, how he did great things.
Oh, here we go, the greatest hits.
Totally. He tells the story, got drunk, dragged to hell, got mad, beat up the ghost judges with his staff, terrified Yama King, nearly wrecked the whole underworld.
Classic Wukong.
Scared the 10 Yamas so badly they signed a paper promising to basically be his servants forever if he did leave them alone.
Huh. He actually got it in writing.
Apparently. And then, just for fun, he throws in that he's like 10,000 7 or 8 years old.
He's what now?
It's just a ridiculous, playful boast, you know, showing off his immense age and power, but in a cheeky way.
Okay, so he's laid it all out. Power, reputation, legendary troublemaker.
Yep. Then comes the climax. He asks the old man, "Hey, want to see my real face?" The old guy, still kind of clueless, is like, "Sure, go ahead."
Uh-oh.
Wukong just wipes his face and bam.
Yeah.
Back to his true form. And the description is intense.
Let's hear it.
Jinya.
Bearing his fangs, mouth wide, fiery red body, tiger skin kilt, golden staff in hand, like a living god of thunder.
Whoa. Quite the sight.
And the poor old man, the one who is just calmly listing the demon's fancy friends. He completely loses it.
How so?
Goes pale, legs buckle, he stumbles, falls down, tries to get up, falls again. Utterly terrified, speechless. When Wukong tries to talk to him, he just pretends he's deaf. The Monkey King. He's back from scouting.
Yep.
And what's striking is how unimpressed he seems by the danger ahead.
Totally. He gives Tang Monk this report, and it's so dismissive. Just brushes it off like, it's nothing serious.
Just a couple of demons.
But the locals, you know, they're timid. They overstate things. No big deal. It's almost like he saw a couple of, I don't know, squirrels.
Exactly. So what does Tang Monk make of that? That kind of bravado?
Well, that's classic Wukong, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what's fascinating is Tang Monk's reaction. He immediately wants specifics, very practical.
Mm-hmm.
He cuts right through Wukong's vague stuff, asking, okay, what mountain is this? What caves? How many monsters? Which way to the Lion Monastery?
He wants the details.
Exactly. It really highlights that contrast, you know. Wukong's heroic dismissal versus the monk's very direct, tangible concerns. He wants facts, not just confidence.
Which is why.
Which is why right on cue, Zhu Baji steps in.
Pigsy.
Yeah.
And he highlights his own self-proclaimed honesty with this really funny jab at Wukong. He says something like,
"Oh, it's great." He says, "Master, don't mind me saying this.
If it's about transformations or mischief or tricking people, even 3 or 5 of us aren't as good as my senior brother."
But if it's about being honest, well, even if you lined up a whole squad like him, they wouldn't compare to me.
Huh. So this honesty of Baji's, is it usually, like, reliable? Or is it just another one of his quirks that gets them into trouble?
It's a bit of both, really. Baji's honesty in the story is kind of a running gag.
Okay.
It often does lead him to uncover crucial details, maybe because he's so blunt.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, yeah, it backfires spectacularly on him.
Right.
He's the perfect foil to Wukong's confidence. You know, the grounded one, even if he's a bit bumbling. And that's exactly why Tang Monk, who really wants real information this time, sends Baji next. He trusts Baji might actually be straightforward, even if it comes with a side of comic ineptitude.
So Baji sets off.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he meets this old man, the description is something else. It says he's twisting and wiggling up the slope.
Oh, it's pure comedic gold. Twisting and wiggling, it's anything but subtle.
Not exactly stealthy.
Not at all. And the old man's reaction is just priceless. He's absolutely terrified.
What does he say?
He exclaims something like, "That first monk," meaning Wukong, "he was ugly, sure, but still had, like, three parts human likeness.
Okay.
But this monk, how can he have such a pestle-like mouth, fan-like ears, an iron plate face, and a banner-like neck, not an ounce of human spirit? It's just wonderfully unflattering.
Wow. Brutal.
But funny. It really captures Baji's look from a terrified person's view.
And Baji, surprisingly, maybe he has a witty comeback, which isn't always his thing.
Right. He laughs and says, "You old man, you're not happy, always judging people. How do you see me?
Yeah.
Ugly is ugly, but I'm endurable, and hey, in a moment I'll be handsome."
Huh. It's a quick, funny moment, but this lighthearted bit, it turns serious fast, doesn't it?
It really does. This is where Baji, through his, let's say, honest, if clumsy, approach, finally gets the real information, the actual scoop.
Right. He presses the old man.
Yeah, for details about the mountain, the demons. And the answers are a world away from Wukong's initial no big deal.
And this is the critical info the old man shares. It's a total game changer. He says, "This mountain, it's called the 800 Lion Camel Ridge."
And in the middle, there's a lion camel cave with three demon kings inside. Three major bosses.
Okay, three kings.
But here's where the tension really ratchets up. Baji's first reaction, another boast.
Of course.
He claims, oh, you know, him, Wukong, and Sha Sheng, they can each take one king easily, no problem.
He's completely underestimating it. That feels very human, actually, facing the unknown.
No, totally. And the old man's reaction to Baji's confidence is just perfect. He just laughs at him.
Just laughs.
Yeah, laughs at his naivete, because the old man knows what's really there. And he lays out the truly staggering scale of the demonic force. This is not just a couple of demons.
Okay, hit us with it. What are the numbers?
Get this. 5,000 minor demons on the South Ridge. 5,000 on the North Ridge.
Okay, that's 10,000 already.
Wait, there's more. 10,000 at the East Road entrance. 10,000 at the West Road entrance.
20,000 more, so 30,000.
Plus 4,000 to 5,000 patrolling and another 10,000 guarding the main gates.
Good grief.
And then he adds countless more for cooking and gathering firewood. But the crucial total he gives, the ones with names and tags.
Yes.
A grand total of 47,000 to 48,000, all specializing in eating people.
48,000 demons.
48,000 demons, organized. It's almost like a military operation. It really leaves you asking, how on earth do you even begin to deal with a threat like that?
Well, Baji's response is predictable, maybe? Immediate terror?
Oh, yeah. The source says he was scared out of his wits. He uses really vivid language there. Absolute terror.
Right.
And his immediate advice to Tang Monk is pure Baji. No need to talk. Let's just save ourselves. Let's run.
Can't blame him. That's a relatable reaction, isn't it? When the numbers are just too big. Flee.
Absolutely. It's pure, understandable terror. And it's not just Baji, you know.
Tang Monk, too.
Tang Monk, hearing these numbers, totally petrified. The text says his hair standing on end, just abject fear. His spiritual side kind of takes a backseat to sheer dread for a moment.
Wow. But Wukong.
Yeah.
What about Wukong, ever the contrarian?
Exactly. He maintains his, like, almost stubborn dismissiveness, even after hearing those numbers from Baji.
He still thinks it's exaggerated.
Yep. Still chalks it up to timid locals making things sound worse than they are.
Why does he cling to that, especially when Baji is clearly terrified?
That's what's so interesting, right? It's that clash. Wukong's heroic bravado, his deep confidence in his own power, versus Baji's more grounded, frankly terrified view of reality.
Mm.
Baji insists the old man's report is true. He emphasizes the 48,000. He saw the fear. He heard the numbers directly. He believes it.
But Wukong?
Wukong? Well, maybe he almost has to deny it. Because his whole identity is built on being the guy who can handle anything. Admitting this is scary might be too much.
Hmm. Interesting. So Wukong's response to Baji's terror is basically, don't be ridiculous.
Pretty much. And then comes his truly audacious claim. He says, just one swing of my staff will clear them all out in half a night.
One swing for nearly 50,000 demons.
Yep. Baji, of course, is still skeptical. He challenges him, right? He says something like, look, those demons would take 7 or 8 days just to check in for duty. How could you clear them all out so fast?
That's actually a good point. What does that tell us about the sure numbers involved?
Baji's skepticism, even though it's kind of funny, really helps you grasp the magnitude.
Right.
It's not just about power, it's logistics. It would take days just for them to muster. But Wukong's confidence is, well, it's legendary. And he's got a solution ready. A solution that fits the scale of the problem.
And this is where he comes up with that incredible imaginative solution.
This is it. He explains his staff. it can stretch to 40 zhang long and 8 zhang thick.
Which is huge.
Huge. Oh, it's enormous. Like maybe 130 feet long and over 80 feet around. Something like that.
Okay.
And his plan, he'll just roll it over the mountain.
Roll it like a rolling pin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Crushing 5,000 in the south, 5,000 in the north, and 40 or 50,000 from east to west, grinding them into meat paste and rotten sauce.
Whoa, that is vivid.
Yeah.
And completely over the top.
It's such a wild image. The sheer scale of Wukong's power, but also his strategic thinking, even if it's fantastical.
Yeah.
He doesn't just fight them. He plans to obliterate them with pure force and a ridiculously oversized weapon.
And does it work? I mean, does Baji buy it?
Well, it seems to.
Yeah.
Baji, despite being terrified and skeptical just moments before, is actually convinced. He says, brother, if you fight like that, it might even be done by the second watch.
High praise from Baji indeed.
It really is.
And then Shawshang, the steady one, Sandy.
Yep.
He chimes in too.
Yeah. Good old Shawshang. Always practical. He just says, master, with our senior brother's power, what is there to fear? Please mount your horse and let's go.
Mm.
He's like the anchor, bringing that calm practicality.
Steadying force.
Exactly. And so, swayed by his disciples, you know, arguments of skill, and maybe the sheer audacity of Wukong's plan, Tang Monk, still scared, but he reluctantly decides to move forward.
Wow. His disciples' conviction wins out over his own terror.
Pretty much. Their belief in their ability, especially Wukong's, is enough to get him moving.
This old man.
Just as quickly as he appeared, he vanishes. Poof. Gone.
Which immediately makes Shussing suspicious, doesn't it? He's always the grounded one.
Exactly.
Mm.
Shussing's first thought is, okay, that was a demon.
Mm.
You know, just trying to scare them off, maybe bluffing them into turning back. A trick.
Makes sense. But Wukong, he doesn't just accept that, does he?
Not Wukong. No way. This is where his sharp instincts kick in. He doesn't just dismiss it. He leaps straight up onto a mountain peak, stands around.
And sees something.
Yeah, he spots this, like, radiant shimmer, colorful clouds way off in the distance.
Mm.
So he zooms over there, gives chase, and guess what? It's not a demon at all.
Who is it then?
It's Tai Bai Jingxing,
mm.
The planet Venus Star-Lord, basically. A pretty high-ranking celestial official. A messenger from the heavens.
Wow. Okay. So the warning came from a god in disguise. That's quite a twist. What does Tai Bai Jingxing say when Wukong catches up?
Well, first he apologizes. Says, sorry, the warning's a bit late. But then he gets serious. He describes the chief demon there as powerful and formidable, really strong.
He doesn't mince words then.
No. And crucially, he tells Wukong, look, success here. It all comes down to your shifting transformations and your clever stratagems, your clever plans. He warns him, point blank, any carelessness means failure. Total failure.
So it's less about fighting head on and more about outsmarting them.
Precisely. It's a direct instruction, almost, to use his unique skills. This isn't just a casual heads up. It's serious advice from someone who knows.
Does Wukong ask for backup then? I mean, if it's that serious.
He does, yeah. He asks about heavenly troops.
Yeah.
And Tai Bai Jingxing basically says, just give the word and you've got 100,000 heavenly soldiers ready to go.
100,000? That's a lot.
It's massive backup. But interestingly, Wukong doesn't immediately call them in, which tells you something about how he prefers to operate, maybe.
So you've got this really serious warning from a celestial being. How does the rest of the group react? You mentioned Tripitaka earlier.
Oh, yeah. Total contrast. Tripitaka hears this and he just bursts into tears. He's terrified. Wants to find another way around, maybe even turn back. Anything to avoid this mountain.
And Wukong's reaction to that?
Firm refusal. He basically tells Tripitaka to stop being namby-pamby. He points out, look, this mountain range is 800 littles wide. That's, what, about 250 miles? It's huge. Impassable, really. And they don't know any other paths.
So turning back isn't feasible?
Not really. And besides, Wukong just isn't the type to run from a challenge. It's not in his nature.
What's interesting is how Wukong sort of downplays the warning, almost, for Tripitaka's sake.
Kinda, yeah. He suggests maybe Tai Bai Jingxing exaggerated a little,
yeah.
You know, just to make sure they're really careful. Like, hey, pay attention. Not necessarily you're doomed.
A psychological move.
Maybe. And then he lays out his own plan, his strategy for getting the intelligence they need.
Ah, okay. So what's the Wukong approach to this massive demonic threat?
It's classic Wukong, honestly. He tells Baji, you protect the master. Tells Shaoxing, you guard the luggage and the horse. Standard procedure.
And himself?
He says, right, I'm going ahead. He plans to, and get this, find out how many demons there are, capture one, question them in detail, make them sign an agreement, list all their names, tell them to close their caves and not block the path.
He wants them to sign an agreement. Seriously.
Apparently. And then he finishes by saying this whole thing will show off my skills. It's just pure confidence. Maybe arrogance, depending on how you see it.
He definitely doesn't lack self-belief. He even boasts something like,
Yeah, I will clear a path, even if it's the Eastern Ocean, and break through the gate, even if it's an ironclad Silver Mountain. Basically, nothing can stop me.
So less about calling in the army, more about his own special talents. Transformation and wit seem key here.
Exactly. He's setting the stage for a very different kind of confrontation.
Okay, so Wukong flies off, confident as ever, heading over the peak to scout things out. What does he find initially? Daemons everywhere.
Actually, no. At first, it's strangely quiet. Silent. He even starts muttering to himself, like, did Tai Bai jinxing just mess with me? Are there even any demons here?
Huh. A moment of doubt.
Maybe just impatience. But then he hears something. A sound starts up.
Okay. What kind of sound?
It's described as clinking, clanking, popping, clattering. Turns out to be bells and clappers. A rhythmic sort of patrolling sound.
And then he sees who's making it?
Yep. A figure appears. A small demon. Though small might be relative here.
How so?
It's described as being 12 chi tall. That's roughly 12 feet 8 inches. So pretty imposing. It's carrying an order flag, and it's got the bells and clappers making all the noise.
Right, a patrol maybe.
Yeah.
What's Wukong's first move?
His first thought is, okay, this must be some kind of messenger or patroller. So he does his classic reconnaissance move, transforms a tiny fly, small enough to not be noticed. He buzzes over and lands right on the demon's hat. Perfect spot for eavesdropping.
Oh, okay, clever. So what does he hear? Troop movements, evil plans.
This is where it gets really wild.
Hmm?
He expects, you know, standard demon chatter. Instead, the demon starts chanting out loud.
Chanting what?
Get this. We mountain patrollers must each carefully guard against Sun Wukong. He can turn into a fly.
Wait, what? He knows Wukong's name and his fly transformation. How?
That's exactly what Wukong thinks. He's totally astonished, thinks, wow, this guy must have spotted me. How else could he know? He's completely taken aback.
But that's not actually what happened.
No. And this is a brilliant little twist in the story. The source makes it clear. The demon hadn't seen him. It was just a rumor. A warning spread by the head honcho, the chief demon.
A general warning to all the patrols. Like, watch out for this tricky monkey who can turn into a fly.
Exactly that. It wasn't specific intelligence about Wukong being there, just a general awareness of his known abilities.
That's fascinating. So the rumor itself almost caught him out. What does Wukong do? Does he attack the demon now?
He's tempted, for sure. His first instinct might be to just whack him. But then he pauses. He remembers what Tai Bai Jinxing said.
About the hierarchy.
Yeah, but the three old demons, the big bosses, and the tens of thousands of smaller ones, like maybe 47,000 or 48,000, he realizes this single patroller, even a big one, isn't the main prize.
He needs intelligence on the leaders first.
Right. Striking now might alert everyone. He needs more information, especially about those old demons. So he decides to hold back. It's a really key moment of strategic thinking, using even that rumor to guide his next move.
Okay, so instead of attacking, what's the new plan?
Adaptation. He lets the demon walk past. Then he leaps off the hat, lands somewhere hidden, and performs another transformation.
What does he turn into this time?
He turns himself into another small demon. Looks identical to the first one. Carries the same kind of flag, the same clappers, the same bells. Just maybe a few inches taller, the text says.
Huh. He's going undercover as one of them. Does he do the chant too?
Oh, yeah. He starts chanting the exact same warning. We must guard against Sun Wukong. He can turn into a fly. Then he hurries to catch up with the original demon.
This should be good. What happens when he catches up?
He calls out, you know, really casually, hey, fellow traveler, wait up. The first demon turns, looks him up and down.
Does he recognize him?
Nope. The demon says, where are you from? I don't know you. And then he adds, besides, you've got a pointy mouth.
Uh-oh. A flaw in the disguise. Wukong's monkey feature showing through.
Seems like it. Wukong secretly thinks, oops, yeah, my mouth got a bit pointy from the transformation. But he doesn't panic. Quick thinking time.
What does he do?
He just casually rubs his face like he's wiping something away, and when he takes his hand down, poof, the mouth is not pointy anymore. Magic touch-up.
Nice save. Does that satisfy the other demon?
It seems to confuse him more than anything, but then the demon gets suspicious again. He says something like, wait a minute, aren't you usually a fire stoker back at the cave? What are you doing out here on patrol?
Ah, busted.
Or maybe another opportunity for Wukong. He immediately stins a story. "Oh, you haven't heard," he says. "The great king, he saw how incredibly good I was at stoking fires. Really exceptional. So he promoted me. Put me out here on patrol now."
Uh-huh. Turning a potential problem into a promotion, that's bold.
It's brilliant improvisation. He's building this fake identity on the fly, literally.
Okay, so he's passed the pointy mouth test, he's invented a promotion, but surely there are procedures, like identification.
You nailed it. That's the next hurdle. The original demon starts explaining the system. He says, "Look, we've got patrols. There are 40 demons in each squad and 10 squads in total."
So 400 patrolling demons.
Seems like it. And he says, "To stop anyone getting mixed up at roll call, everyone has an identity tag." And then he asks Wukong, the question Wukong probably didn't want to hear, "Where's your tag?"
Right. Because Wukong just copied the look, not the actual equipment. He wouldn't have a tag. What does he do?
This is probably my favorite bit of quick thinking in the whole chapter. He doesn't even flinch. He immediately says, "Oh, my tag. Yeah, I just got a brand new one. Just issued. Tell you what, let me see yours first."
Classic misdirection. Make the other guy show his cards. Does it work?
Perfectly. The demon, totally unsuspecting now, pulls out his tag. It's described as a gold lacquered tag.
Then what does it say?
It's inscribed with his title, Little Vanguard, Xiao Zhuangfeng. Wukong takes a good look, noting the details, especially the text points out the character for wind, Feng, in the name.
Okay, he's seen the real thing. Now what? Does he bluff his way out of not having one?
Oh, much better than that. This is Wukong's masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
He discreetly plucks a single hair from his own body.
Here we go.
Blows on it, says the magic word, and transforms that hair into an identical gold lacquered tag.
Wow, okay. Does it say Little Vanguard, too?
Nope. Using the information he just got, he makes his tag say Chief Vanguard, Zong Zhuangfeng.
Yeah.
Not just a Vanguard, but the chief one.
He's promoted himself again.
Exactly. And now he has the prop to prove it. He proudly shows this new tag to the original demon.
What's the final piece of the lie? How does he explain this sudden massive promotion from Firestoker to Chief Vanguard?
He doubles down on the Firestoking story. He says triumphantly, "Yeah, the great king said my Firestoking was just so outstanding, so unparalleled, that he promoted me right up, made me Chief Patrolman in charge of this whole 40 demon squad."
That is just audacious. How does the poor little Vanguard demon react to this?
He completely buys it, instantly. He sees the tag, hears the story, and just bows down, calls Wukong officer, apologizes like mad for being rude, for not recognizing his new superior. He's totally convinced.
Incredible. Wukong just manufactured authority out of thin air, a hair, and a good lie.
And he doesn't stop there. Seeing the demon is completely submissive, Wukong immediately presses his advantage.
What does he do now? Order him around.
Even better. He demands money. He says, "Okay, since this is our first meeting since my promotion, where's the first meeting money?" Basically, a bribe or a customary gift for a new boss.
He's asking the demon he just met for cash. How much?
He demands 5 liang from each patrolman in the squad. Remember, there are 40 in the squad. A liang was a unit of silver back then, so that's quite a bit of money he's asking for.
Wow. And the demon?
The little vanguard just says, "Oh, right away, officer. The rest of my squad, they're patrolling over on the South Ridge. I'll go collect the money from them right now."
And Wukong?
Wukong says, "Good idea. I'll come with you." And just like that, he's not just infiltrated. He's effectively taken command of a demon patrol squad and is about to potentially collect their protection money. Wukong, but it's more than just looking the part, isn't it? He's playing mind games straight away.
Oh, absolutely. What's really cool here is how fast he establishes dominance. He spots this landmark, right? A Pen Peak. It's described as a peak maybe 40 or 50 feet high, shaped like a brush. And he just hops right on top. It's such a power move, you know, physically looking down on them, sending a signal.
Right. And from up there, he starts bossing around the other little vanguards. Says he's the new chief vanguard sent by the big boss and the cover story. He's there to check for spies. Specifically, he pretends they're worried Sun Wukong might be disguised as one of them.
Mm.
Brilliant misdirection.
Ruh.
Using their own fear.
It really is. And this leads to the key question. How does he get the actual info he needs? Well, he pretends he doesn't know enough about the Great Kings. Demands they tell him about their powers. He even says, like, "Convince me you're real or I'll report you as fakes." Puts them totally on the spot.
I pressure attack it. Okay, so it works. The junior demon starts talking.
He does. He spills everything. Which brings us to the first of these guys. The eldest great king. And the description is pretty wild.
Go on. What does the little demon say? Because it sounds almost impossible.
Well, according to the junior demon, this eldest great king swallowed 100,000 heavenly soldiers in one gulp.
One gulp. Seriously. Even Wukong must think that sounds a bit much.
He does challenge it internally, but the junior demon has this explanation. He says the king is a master transformer, you know, like Wukong. He can get as large as heaven or as small as a mustard seed. Apparently, he got snubbed for the queen mother's peach banquet.
Ah, the classic celestial snub leads to trouble.
Always. So he decides to contend with Evan. The Jade Emperor sends down this huge army, 100,000 soldiers, and the king just transforms, opens his mouth like a city gate, and whoosh, swallows the lot. Scares heaven so much, they shut the gates.
Wow. Okay. And you mentioned Wukong himself sort of relates to this.
Yeah, there's this moment where he thinks kind of internally that he's done similar things, challenging heaven, you know. It immediately puts this demon king on a certain level, like, okay, this isn't just some monster. This is someone who operates on a cosmic scale, almost like Wukong himself. It shows you the kind of power Wukong's facing.
Right, sets the stage. Okay, so that's the eldest king transformation, cosmic scale swallowing.
Right.
What about the second great king? Is he similar or different?
He's different, physically very distinct, described as 3 zhang tall, so over 10 feet, and these specific features, silkworm eyebrows, phoenix eyes, a beautiful voice, flat pole teeth, and a nose like a dragon.
Those sound very specific. Do they mean anything?
Often, yeah. In this kind of mythology, features like that can hint at maybe an ancient lineage or a specific kind of power.
Mm.
Makes him sound more than just a brute. But his main attack, it's weird. He rolls a person up with his nose.
With his nose?
Yeah. And apparently it's devastating. Even beings with, like, iron bodies and copper skin would just lose their souls if he got them with his nose.
Okay, that is unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
What's Wukong's take on that?
He has this quick thought, you know, classic Wukong. A demon who rolls people up with his nose should be easy to catch.
Huh. Typical.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit too confident there.
Could be. Little bit of bravado, which actually makes the next demon stand out even more.
Because the third great king is maybe not someone Wukong thinks he could just catch easily.
Exactly. The junior demon really emphasizes this one, says he's not an ordinary monster. His real name or title is the cloud-soaring myriad-mile rock. A rock. Think massive, mythical bird.
Okay, a rock. So, speed, flight.
Immense speed, capable of soaring with wind and ocean, flapping to the north and south, just covering vast distances incredibly quickly. That alone is a huge strategic advantage.
But there's more, isn't there? Something about a treasure.
Ah, yes. The really chilling part, he has this personal treasure, the yin-yang tu-chi bottle.
Yin-yang tu-chi bottle. Sounds ominous.
It is. If you get trapped inside in just an hour and a quarter, you're basically dissolved, turned into liquid, gone.
Dissolved. Okay, that sounds bad. How does Wukong react to hearing about this bottle?
This is where you see a crack in his usual confidence. Outwardly, he's probably calm, but internally, the text says he's startled. He realizes he must carefully guard against his bottle.
That's significant, right? For Wukong to actually feel fear, or at least serious caution?
Absolutely. He's faced gods and demons, powerful weapons. But this is like an unblockable countdown to utter annihilation. It feels different. It's a real game-changer threat.
Yeah. So, okay. 3 incredibly powerful demons. Different skills, different threats. Why are they working together? What's the big plan involving Tang Monk?
Right. Good question. What's their motivation? Well, the first 2 kings, they live at Lion Camel Ridge. But the third one, the Rock, he lives about 400 line west, maybe, what, 125 miles? In a city called Lion Camel Kingdom.
Lion Camel Kingdom. And there's a dark story behind that place, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. A really horrific one. About 500 years back, the Rock, the third king, he apparently devoured everyone in the original kingdom.
Everyone. Like the king, the people.
The king, his officials, every man, woman, and child just wiped them out and took over the city. So now it's a kingdom populated entirely by demons he commands.
That's chilling. Just pure evil on a massive scale.
It really sets a dark tone. And their combined goal now, to capture Tang Monk.
For the immortality rumor, right? Eat his flesh.
Exactly. Because he's a 10-generational good man, the legend says eating him grants eternal life. But here's the interesting strategic part. They didn't team up just because they're greedy. They specifically allied because they know how powerful Sun Wukong is. They fear him.
So their alliance is actually a sign of respect for Wukong's power. A strategic move against him.
Precisely. It shows they're not just dumb brutes. They're thinking strategically, pooling their immense powers specifically to overcome the obstacle they know Wukong represents. They see him as the main threat to their plan.
And how does Wukong take hearing all this? The plan, the threat to his master.
He explodes, just pure incandescent rage. He sees his master's journey, his path to enlightenment being threatened like this. And in that fury, he just lashes out and strikes the junior Duman dead, turns him into a lump of flesh. It's very sudden, very raw.
Whoa.
But then what's interesting is he almost immediately regrets it.
Regrets killing a demon spy?
Well, yeah. He realizes the little demon was actually helpful. You know, candid. He just answered the questions asked. It's this flicker of complexity in Wukong. A moment of remorse, maybe, for this low-level guy who was just basically doing his job, even if it was for the bad guys, shows Wukong isn't just pure instinct.
Huh. That is an interesting nuance. Hmm. But he doesn't dwell on it for long, I bet.
Not at all. Well, quick thinker. Yeah. He immediately sees an opportunity in the unfortunate situation. He takes the dead demon's stuff, his badge, flag, bell, clapper, all the identifying items.
And transforms into him.
Exactly. Transforms into the likeness of that junior demon and heads back towards the main cave. And his destination is the Lion Camel Cave, a really notorious place.
Known for some very powerful demons.
Absolutely. But as he gets closer, he sees the real scale of the problem. It's a massive army outside the cave.
How massive?
The text says 10,000 minor demons.
Wow.
And they're organized, not just a mob, they're in big teams. 250 demons each, 40 colorful flags. It's a serious disciplined force.
Okay, that's daunting. And Wukong, he's smart. He sees the strategic issue right away.
Mm-hmm.
Just sneaking in wearing the disguise. Too risky.
Way too risky. What if the leader, the old demon, asks him about his patrol? A wrong word.
And bam, sky's blown. He's trapped by 10,000 guards.
Right. So he figures it out. To catch the Demon King in the cave, he must first get rid of the monsters at the gate.
Makes sense. Deal with the perimeter first.
And what's really interesting is how he decides to do it. He doesn't think about fighting them all.
No. Against 10,000. Probably wise.
Very wise. He realizes his own name, his reputation, is already a weapon. He figures the demon leaders probably know who he is, even if they haven't met him.
Ah, the legend precedes him.
Precisely. So he decides to, and I quote, rely on his name, leverage his prestige, and speak some grand words to scare them.
Use the fear that's already there.
Exactly. It's about pre-existing narrative. His reputation does half the work before he even says much.
So this is the plan. How does he actually, you know, execute it? He's still looking like Xiao Xuanfeng.
Right, and he walks towards the Lion Camel Cave, but he's not trying to be quiet.
No.
No, he's beating a bamboo clapper and shaking a bell, making quite a racket, announcing himself.
Okay, that's bold. What happens?
Well, the first group of demons, the outer layer, they try to stop him. They call out, Xiao Xuanfeng, you're back.
Yeah.
Wukong just lowers his head, keeps walking, doesn't say a word.
Building suspense.
Totally. Making them wonder. Then he reaches the second layer of the camp.
Oh, more demons.
Yeah, and they grab him, ask the same thing. Xiao Xuanfeng, you're back.
Does he answer this time?
He does. Just says, coolly, I'm back.
Okay.
And then they ask the question he's been waiting for. The absolute crucial one.
Which is?
You went on patrol this morning. Did you run into Sun Wukong?
Ah, so they are thinking about him. That proves his theory.
Exactly. It shows his reputation is working. They're already worried about him. Not just random trouble, but specifically Sun Wukong.
He's tacked into their main fear.
He totally has. He knows his audience. And now he's ready to exploit it.
So what does he say? This is the core of the bluff.
But this is it. He launches into this just chilling story. Completely made up, of course.
Okay.
He says, yes, I ran into him. He's there grinding a pole.
Grinding a pole. Like sharpening it.
Sort of, yeah. But he doesn't just say that. He paints this picture, a really terrifying one.
Give us the details.
He describes Wukong himself really squatting by the stream, still looking like a path-clearing god. If he stands up, he's like 10-odd zhang long.
Which is huge.
Tens of feet tall. Absolutely colossal. A giant.
Wow. Okay, that's a visual.
And the weapon. An iron pole as thick as a bowl. A big pole. Massive.
So giant monkey god with a giant weapon.
But it gets better. It's the ritual he claims he saw. That's the psychological masterstroke.
What ritual?
He says he saw Wukong scooping up water from the stone cliff, grinding the pole, and muttering something.
I'm muttering what?
This is the killer part. He claims Wukong was saying, "Oh, pole, I haven't taken you out to show your divine power lately. This time there are 10,000 demons and you'll kill them all for me.
Whoa.
Let me kill those three demon leaders to sacrifice to you."
He's saying Wukong plans to use the entire army as a sacrifice for his weapon.
Essentially, yes. And then the final line he delivers, he's going to grind it bright, then first kill the 10,000 demons at your gate.
So he tells these guards that Wukong sees them as just target practice, a warm-up.
Exactly. Their imminent destruction is just step one for this terrifying giant.
How do the demons react? I mean, this is coming from, they think, is one of them.
Utter panic. Pure terror. The text says their hearts pounding and trembling, souls scattered and flying.
They buy it completely.
Instantly. The fear Wukong represents, combined with these vivid, specific, scary details, it feels utterly real to them. It bypasses any critical thought.
Fear overriding reason.
Absolutely. It shows how a powerful story hitting the right emotional notes can be overwhelmingly persuasive. The threat feels immediate, even though Wukong isn't physically there like that.
And Wukong, seeing this panic, he jumps on it.
Oh, immediately. He's a master opportunist. He taps right into their basic survival instinct.
Ow.
He says something like, "Look, everyone, Tang Seng's flesh, there isn't that much of it anyway. Not enough for all of us."
Appealing to their practical side. Or greed.
More like their sense of self-preservation. He continues, "Why should we take this risk for the bosses? How about we just scatter? Save ourselves."
He's not ordering them. He's suggesting they run, giving them an out.
Precisely. He's validating the fear they already feel and giving them permission to act on it. It's genius, really, reading the room perfectly.
And does it work?
Like a charm. Remember, these aren't human soldiers with deep loyalty. The book calls them wolves, insects, tigers, leopards, beasts, and birds.
Basically, wild animals in demon form.
Pretty much. Their main loyalty is to staying alive. So they hear this suggestion. Mm-hmm. They just go. A unified woo, the text says. They break ranks, scatter, flee in all directions. A total rout.
An entire army of 10,000 demons. Gone. Just like that. Without a fight.
Without a single actual blow struck by Wukong. It's incredible.
Now, Wukong must be pretty pleased with himself.
He's secretly delighted, yeah. He even compares it to a famous historical event, the Chusong, that scattered 8,000 soldiers.
Ah, the story of Zhang Yu's army deserting him after hearing homesick songs.
Exactly. Psychological warfare at its finest. Wukong sees his words achieving the same effect. He thinks the old demon is dead, metaphorically speaking. Their spirit is broken if their army runs like that.
But he's still cautious, right? Even after this huge success.
If so, yes. He knows he still has to get inside the cave. He's aware that one wrong word, one slip-up, could still reveal his disguise. He doesn't let the victory make him careless, always thinking ahead. ¶¶